You're listening to the Strongpreneur Podcast, where we're waging war on mediocrity. Live your strong life and build your strong business with me, Tom Reber. Mediocrity dies today.
Thank you for tuning in to the Strongpreneur Podcast, where we are waging war on mediocrity in your life and in your business. I'm Tom Reber, and today I'm excited to have my guest, Adam Mock, on with us. Now check this out. This is a pretty crazy bio here. We were just laughing about this. Adam Mock was made in Thailand with American parts. He was born in the United States in 1972. He has been a professional artist for over 10 years, with his artwork appearing in numerous forms, including advertisements, corporate logos, websites, and book covers. And he actually created my logo as well, the Motor logo that I have tattooed on my forearm. In February 2012, he co-authored the IPPY award-winning MIME very own book alongside Scott Allen Perry, starring actor Doug Jones, with photography by Eric Curtis. Adam once again paired with Scott Allen Perry to co-author Eric Curtis's visual allegory, Fallen Superheroes. He's a certified leadership coaching specialist and senior consultant with Accelero Leadership, using his what box mentality to develop divergent thinking leaders. For the past 7 years, he's served on the board of directors for Triple Threat Mentoring, helping to empower kids through arts, academics, and athletic programming. And he was recently voted on to the board of directors for On the Wings of Angels, a nonprofit dog rescue organization based in Florida. Adam also enjoys inspirational-based speaking. As an articulate communicator and storyteller, he brings an authentic and refreshingly honest approach to his presentations. As the current COO of Medallion Media Group, Adam invented the groundbreaking new reading format, which is like totally cool. It's called the Tree Book, which learns your reading habits and then organically branches the story based on how you read. That's pretty cool. Adam, along with his wife Sarah, is the co-owner of the Odd Dotty Empire, an eclectic art empire that creates one-of-a-kind handmade whimsical gifts and repurposes old items into new treasures. He currently resides in Aurora, Illinois with his wife Sarah, their daughter Magpie, and their son Gabriel. Welcome, my buddy Adam.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
How you doing today?
Doing good.
You doing good?
Yeah.
All right, so this is interesting. This is the first time I've done a podcast live in the same room. I'm normally on a Skype call with somebody, and we're not looking at each other, so this is kind of cool. It's I almost don't know what to do.
I like it. I like it. It's just cool. Like hanging out.
Yeah, so I always start the Strongpreneur podcast by first talking a little bit about why I invited certain guests on. And I've been looking forward to this for a really, really long time. This podcast has been on my radar for a while. And, you know, I won't go into detail here, but for those of you listening, Adam had a huge part in me starting my business, leaving my former life, and starting this thing called Motor that we didn't know what it was going to be. And I remember sitting down at a table at a Starbucks, and when we were working this whole thing out of what my company would look like, and one of the last things you said that day was, "Dude, I can't wait to see what this thing looks like in a couple years." Mm-hmm. And here it is, a couple years, and we're doing a podcast, and I just think it's pretty wild.
Love it.
But I wanted you here certainly because of our friendship and the part you've had in my business and my career, and you've helped me in so many ways, dude. And I'm just fired up to have you. When I think of somebody who has a strong life and a strong business, who knocks the piss out of mediocrity in many ways, I think of you, and I always have. So I wanted you here. But I also wanted you here for other reasons. You're a super unique guy. I mean, we listen to your bio, and it's pretty crazy. You're massively creative. You're a guy that thinks outside the box. You've had a lot of rough times. You've motored back, and now you're like one of the poster boys for someone who refuses to be mediocre. Mm-hmm. And so that's really why I wanted you here, because I know you, I know how you tell stories, I know how your real life examples resonate with so many people, and I just want to help our listeners not to have crappy lives and businesses at the end of the day. So
okay.
tell us about Adam Mock.
Well, Adam Mock, a lot of it you heard in my bio. Some of the things that you said are is really interesting. You know, you talk about the beginning with Motor, and we were sitting at that Starbucks. I remember even that meeting was interesting because I was so busy. I remember saying, I don't have time to make a logo or to do anything like that, but I believed in what you were doing enough to say, okay, let's spend some time here. And that's really like what started developing even our friendship,
right?
Was that, which is pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, my bio, I think, speaks for itself. I'm a very eclectic person. I like to, it's not just out of the box thinking for me. I took a course once in Las Vegas, and it was led by this guy named Armin Garabedian. Great guy and great creative thinker. He owns Ethos Design, and he gets to design like the Oscars, I think, and the Academy Awards and stuff.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, really cool guy. And struck up a friendship with him, but I went to a course that he did called What Box, and it always stuck with me. And so I have to give Armin all the credit for this. Armin, if you hear this, thank you on that. And he had this concept that there is in-the-box thinking, which we know of, and then there is out-of-the-box thinking. But the problem with out-of-the-box thinking is it still recognizes the orthodox. It still recognizes the machine.
Right.
So you still acknowledge that there is this box.
It still draws attention to the box.
And so on some level, you keep looking at the box saying, are we in line with that? But what box thinking was very freeing. It kind of destroys the whole idea that there's no box that exists. So there is no norm. There's no orthodox, which gives you full creativity. And an example that he had, I remember, was saying you're designing an exhibitor booth for an airline, and your inspiration is whatever I give you. And I remember he gave one group a Cheeto. And so this group is looking at a Cheeto saying, how do we use this Cheeto as a launch pad to design an exhibitor booth that will draw people to a commercial airline? Mm-hmm. And the two aren't related at all, but it challenges your thinking. And so I like to live my life in this what box manner. I like to say, well, what's possible? Not just what has been done and how do we always improve upon what's been done. There's a time and place for that. But what's possible? What's completely untapped? There's just so much frontier to explore. So
yeah, I mean, there's... You know, all those stats with those brain specialists that say we barely even scratch the surface of what goes on inside of our heads. And yet we limit ourselves all the time by, like you were saying, acknowledging the box.
Yeah.
That it's just there. So your career, you're now the COO of Medallion Media, which is a pretty sweet gig with some great people.
Yeah.
I know I'll let you talk about that a little bit. But how'd you get there? Where'd you start? What?
I started what preface.
You were like a knight in shining armor at one point.
Close.
Okay.
I was more like a surf in dirt. I worked at Medieval Times for 13 years, which taught me, at the time when I was getting ready to leave after 13 years, I was getting pretty disgruntled. You know, you invest 13 years of your life in an organization, and I felt underappreciated and underutilized. It's not a slight on Medieval Times. I made a ton of great relationships there. And even equal to that, or more so to that, was the fact that I learned a lot when I was there. It was a good proving grounds for me. So 13 years in Medieval Times, I started as a photographer. I ended up being the assistant manager of the photo department. I waited tables there. I ran the food and beverage department. I did corporate sales and marketing for them. And it allowed me to learn a lot about customers and about value. Just by osmosis, you start to learn when you wait tables that the more personable you are and the more you treat people as individuals, the higher tips you're going to get.
Sure.
Which allows you to personalize this type of attention. And Medieval Times allowed me to do some art for them. So I was known as an illustrator. A lot of times people equate art with illustration, not art as big as art is. Mm-hmm. You know, they think, hey, you're a great drawer.
Right.
That's what people say. But I could write as well, and I could do some creative things. But they allowed me to do some things there. So towards the end of my relationship with Medieval Times, I was doing some freelance artwork for a group out of the Bristol Renaissance Fair called the Swordsmen. Mm-hmm. And they're a very, very popular act there, Dirk and Guido the Swordsmen. They're great. And I did a coloring book for them, and I had done a poster. And so I caught the attention of...
So you illustrated the whole coloring book.
Yes.
Like, here it is, and then...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was called The ABCs of the Swordsman.
Okay.
And I had also done some tattoos for people. Not like I know how to tattoo, but I had designed tattoos for people.
Right. Yep.
I had done some greeting cards, an acting line of greeting cards for actors and performers. I had my artwork in various medieval times, brochures, things like that, you know, advertisements. So anyways, I caught the attention of the vice president of Medallion Press, a brand new publishing company that started in 2003, mm-hmm. and which is owned by Helen Rich, one of my dearest friends, who is the great-granddaughter of William Wrigley, the Wrigley
for name. All you Cubs fans, you know what we're talking about.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
And people who like gum.
Yeah.
All right.
Gum, so, the Cubs, gum, you know yeah. it. It's so, a global brand.
Right.
So the company's owned by Helen Rich. So her former VP brought me on to ask me if I would illustrate a book cover, mm-hmm. and it was for a romance book. And I turned this opportunity down three times because I actually was really busy. I was busy working at Medieval Times. I had some other freelance work, and I almost passed the job off to the person who is now my current art director.
Okay.
And she asked me the third time, and I said, I'll do this one book cover.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a time in my life when I wanted to be known for my art, and I remember going to comic conventions and saying, I can't wait for people to stand in line to get my autograph.
Right.
And yep. make a name for myself. The second I let that idea go, and I just applied myself fully, is when I became most successful, most known for my art, is when it wasn't about my name.
Mm.
It was about my talent, and my talent spoke for itself. So I got this opportunity. And I did this one book cover. It was for a romance called Jinxed by Beth Sciotta, wonderful gal. Wonderful. She's a very popular romance.
So is this like a cover that had like Fabio on the front?
No, it's so funny because it was illustrated. So it looked like a cel-shaded cartoon, okay? And it had a guy and girl on the cover. And I really enjoyed doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was going to be it. Well, right after that, then I was asked to do another romance cover. I think the book was called Heart of Vengeance. Totally different style. I had to make photographs look like they were paintings, and I had mm-hmm. to put them in a collage and have good composition. So what was cool is I was being challenged artistically, and I was getting some money on the side by doing these covers.
Right.
Well, fast forward, and I get made the art director of this new company, Medallion Press.
Right.
And then in 2006, I was made the vice president of the company. And so I was still doing some art for them, but I was getting recognized for my my business skills
right.
By Helen. Go ahead.
No, so you go from being this dude working at Medieval Times, mm-hmm. serving and doing some illustrating and this and that. You pick up a side gig.
Mm-hmm.
A few years later, you're the vice president of the company.
Yeah.
Okay. So a minute ago, you said that your career got stronger when you let go of that dream of people standing in line and, you know, going all hail the great artist, right. Adam.
Yeah.
What did that look like? Was it a conscious decision or did
yeah, it was.
When did that happen in this journey? When
it was 100% when I got that job to do, actually it was before I got the job to do that cover. It was when I was working with the Swordsman and doing their coloring book. And I realized that I wanted it to look the best for them, not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was super freeing because then I could put myself in a position to impress people. But had all the pressure off of like trying to succeed for the sake of my own name.
Yeah.
You know, in business, I think we call it me-ism, where mm-hmm. people think that the organization exists for them, mm-hmm. the individual. And what they lose sight of is why the organization is there. I didn't know the why I wanted to be an artist. I thought it was because I wanted to make a name for myself, right? But the reason I wanted to be an artist, the why, was because it made me happy. It made me happy to create.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me happy to see other people, like with Motor, to sit down with you and sketch out on a napkin or like a notepad mm-hmm. what a Motor logo could look like based on what you're dreaming of in your head. That's super exciting to formulate that. That's not about me.
Right.
That's about what you want. Yeah. So that's when it happened is then. So by the time I did that first book cover, I was in a mindset of I'm giving 100% of myself to something else.
Okay.
And not for the sake of me, for the sake of
and that jumped out at me because I'm Tom Reber and I speak and I coach and I do all that. And there's that balance between being the self-promoting, I got to build my name, I got to build my personal brand.
Right.
And everything else we're talking about, and it really just comes down to you just going, hey, it ain't about me.
Mm-hmm.
It's about adding value, which is an overused term that we all use in business, mm-hmm. that you just add value. But and the more you made it less about you, the more really your brand grew, personal brand.
Absolutely.
Brand grew,
like, yeah. Know. Like so, with Motor, Tom Reber yeah. has value because of why Motor exists.
Mm-hmm.
So if you lose sight of the why, you want people that know the Motor mantra.
Right.
It becomes about, here's Tom Reber.
Mm-hmm.
But the value lies in Motor first.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Lies in the Motor message. That's why you do it. That's why you tattooed it on your arm.
Right. But it also comes, you know, in not... This is about you here today, not me, but sure. It's also about, at the end of the day, if I'm not delivering the value that people hire me for,
right.
then nothing's going to happen.
Yes.
And so that's, again, at the end of the day, it's whatever it takes to give people more than what they wanted, more
yes.
than what you promised them.
Absolutely. So, and for both of us, like for both of our journeys, the byproduct is our names mean something. Though.
Right.
And it's icing on the cake. Absolutely. It feels really good to get recognized for your name and for your work. It's the byproduct of what you create and why you do it. So when my art got recognized, I mean, I got to the point where I could sit at a convention and people come up and ask me for my autograph. So I've been able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, but that came as a byproduct uh-huh. of putting projects first, not yeah. the name of Adam Mock first. The yeah. talent spoke for itself. The Motor message speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. And so Tom Reber, people want to hire Tom Reber because Motor message has value. And who yeah. can bring it? Well, Tom can bring it.
And I talk to a lot of people about this all the time. I said, you know, I had a painting company years ago. And one of the reasons that our painting company did so well is we didn't make it about the paint job. We made it about the whole experience. Mm-hmm. And if you just focus on making whatever you're doing, whether it's a project like you did or you're painting a house or whatever your business happens to be, hoping the point that everyone gets here is that when you make that experience totally kick ass.
Yeah.
You can't help but also get the byproducts that come along with mm-hmm. that, like profit and money, profit and sure. pats on the back, you know,
yeah.
and all that stuff. So
it's the perks for sure. Yeah.
All right, so I cut you off when you said you were promoted to VP.
So I was promoted to yeah. vice president, which made me really neurotic. I call myself the reluctant leader. Okay. It feels like a Moses moment, really, because what I said to Helen, she said, I want to make you my vice president. And I said, I'm happy doing art. Mm. I didn't want to be her vice president.
Okay.
I was really happy doing art. And she said something that always sticks with me, and it just, she endeared herself to me with this. And I say this a lot. I've told people about it. But she said, I remember her on the phone saying, Adam, the problem is I see more in you than you see in yourself. And I couldn't argue what she said. I knew that she wasn't just trying to say, well, I just need a vice president. What she was saying was, I want Adam Mock as my vice president. Mm. And she was seeing something in me that I couldn't see in myself. And so it gave me a lot of pause where I just saw myself in a limited capacity. I'm an artist. She saw a leader and then some. She saw an artist as being part of that leader.
Yeah.
Right?
So when she had this vision for you, how did it make you feel? I mean, were you jacked up? Were you afraid? Were you
Oh, yeah.
freaked out?
I was scared. I was absolutely scared. Yeah. It's a lot of responsibility to go mm-hmm. from someone who's an art director to someone who's leading an organization
right.
Full on. So I accepted the position, realized I had to make some changes in the company right away, and I can't remember off the top of my head what they were, but it was one way that the company was headed, and there was a way that I thought that we could strengthen the company, that we could build more momentum than we even had,
okay.
Trim the fat in a lot of ways financially.
So you walked in their first day as VP with an axe?
Pretty much.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, it's exactly what happened. It was very freeing to go, these decisions are mine to make with Helen okaying them, you know, with the CEO uh-huh. of the company saying, I'm putting my trust in you to make good decisions for the organization. That was very freeing. And I did that, made mistakes. I know mm-hmm. I made mistakes. And you learn really quick. You learn about, you know, the value of teams, the value of right. outside networks,
uh-huh.
The focus, when the focus is internal, when the focus is external, things like that. Over time, I got promoted then to president because the company was growing.
Mm-hmm.
And so this vice president position became president. And then as we grew even more, we developed into Medallion Press wasn't just publishing books. We wanted to invest in the arts, independent filmmakers, independent music artists. And so we grew into Medallion Media Group, with Medallion Press being one arm. And they made me, Helen made me the COO over Medallion Media Group, which is a huge honor, a big responsibility. It's a big vision, a big picture position.
Mm-hmm.
Having vision, it's a very what box. It's not just where are we, but not where do we want to head 3 years from now? Where do we want to be 5 years from now? Yeah. And how do we reverse engineer things to get there and right. set us upright? So I went from waiting tables at Medieval Times to working for one of the most influential names in the world.
Yeah. So she makes you VP. And something you said a minute ago is like, okay, she's given me this responsibility to make these decisions. Mm-hmm. And it's funny you bring that up because recently I was having a conversation with a couple business owners about how to grow their business in a way that everything didn't fall on their shoulders mm-hmm. as the leaders. That's a pretty common thing in an organization. It sounds, and one of the things I said is, I was like, you have to at some point trust somebody.
Yeah.
And I know as a leader of an organization, that's scary. Did you feel like from day one you were trusted, even though like on the experience scale and all these other, you had all these reasons to go, I really don't know what I'm doing. But what do you think it was that she trusted? What was it?
That's a great question, man. It's a really great question. Helen Rich is a very unique individual, mm-hmm. for one. And trust is absolutely earned with her. She's been a dear friend of mine now for 10 years.
Right.
And I've seen people come and go in her life. Trust is earned. The best way I can put it is divine appointment. It's the mm-hmm. best way I can explain it. She didn't have a lot of reason to trust me other than off of my character, my personality.
Sure.
She knew what it was like to deal with me creatively on book covers,
mm-hmm.
and that I would always seek her approval. It wasn't what I wanted. It's what the vision that she wanted for it. I think one of the first things that built trust with us was a very personal thing that happened with her, where she was going through a second bout of breast cancer. And being as the company was young and we were all working remotely, she lives in Florida and I was in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been very easy for me just to assume that in the ivory tower that, you know, people see her in, that she's fine with her cancer, that everything's okay. But I reached out to her one day by email, and we didn't have a real, like, close-knit relationship at all. I reached out to her by email and I just said, how are you doing? I'm praying for you. I heard you have cancer. And she responded back just with this warm, very nurturing, like, you know, response saying, oh my gosh, I'm so glad to hear from you. And we just got to talking about life and spirituality and dreams and who we are as people. And I think that was the absolutely start of trust for us.
My guess is at that point, mm-hmm. She probably, not to answer for her, but my guess is she was probably like, all right, I don't know where, but this dude is going to do something in my business. You know what I mean? You ever have somebody like that yeah. that you hire and they're just around and you're like, I have no idea where they belong,
yeah.
but they belong on the team.
Yeah.
And in your case, you end up
it makes running me laugh. The team. Yeah, you know? It makes me laugh when you say it because I can picture her right now smiling and saying that she treats me like... we old friends. I mean, like, we're just old friends. And so I think she would extend it even further to say at the beginning, it probably was, this is somebody I want on my team. And then it became for both of us, this is someone I just want in my life.
And that really shows some obviously maturity and patience on her part to just go, okay, this thing's got to ride out a little ways and yeah. we'll see what happens. So
definitely.
I was going to ask this later because so I'm going to go out of order because we talked about teams here
sure.
and her hiring. You've been part of some pretty awesome teams here at Medallion and mm-hmm. Triple Threat and some of these other organizations that you're a part of, man. I mean, they're really kicking butt.
Mm-hmm.
There's some amazing people. You guys are cranking out some great work, doing a lot of great things. So many entrepreneurs have a hard time finding good people, keeping good people, building a strong team. What have you learned about building a strong team that you think might be worth sharing with some people here today?
I think you touched on one, trust. Mm-hmm. If there's not trust amongst your team, you're not going to go anywhere, and you're going to be working with a bunch of sharks who are out for themselves. Trust has to be built, and trust is absolutely earned. The other thing about building strong teams is knowing what your weaknesses are. Being a leader doesn't mean that you're perfect,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't mean that you don't fail. It probably means that you fail more times than anybody else does.
Right.
But being a leader means that you understand where you're weak. And strong leaders, what they'll do is they will surround themselves with people who are stronger than them in the areas that they're weak.
Yeah.
That's what I've chosen to do at Medallion. Helen and I complement each other very well. Her daughter Allie is now the president of the company, mm-hmm. and she's learning the trades, and she's got a great mind for business and a great eye for art. And we all get along, and we all have very similar, very outgoing personality types and very big picture personality types, which meant I knew that the senior VP who I was going to be working close with and who Allie, the president, was going to work close with, needed to be somebody who not only understood that big picture, but could funnel it down so that it can be realistic operationally. Mm-hmm. It can take it from a 50,000-foot perspective to a base level. And have boots on the ground actually doing things that get us to where we want to go. And so I started learning that it takes all types to run a business.
Right.
You can't have a business of everyone with the same personality type. Something will fall through. You have a bunch of dreamers, and then nothing will get accomplished. They'll have zero follow-through, right?
Right.
Or you'll have a bunch of people who are very anal about having X, Y, and Z lined up that they don't dare to dream. Yeah. And they're too scared to
do. Or they never get the project off the ground because they never do anything. They're planning the thing too much. So,
yeah. Part of a strong team is that. It's celebrating differences amongst people where trust is. Again, it comes down to that word value. Yeah. That's where value is built. Pure leadership. I've said this before. It's a great quote from the book Leadership from the Inside Out by Kevin Cashman. He defines leadership as authentic influence that creates value.
Say that again.
Authentic influence uh-huh. that creates value. Okay. And I love it because it means that the first word authentic means be 100% who you are at all times, 100% of the time. It's authentic.
Yep.
You will influence people with who you are. You will draw people to you, and you're going to repel some people away, but you're going to draw people to you. It's authentic influence. But what does it do? It creates value. So if everyone's being who they are and you find yourself drawn together on a team, now value is birthed on that and trust is birthed mm-hmm. on that, and you can move things forward. It also means making sure that teams understand that some people are on the team for a season.
Mm.
They're not there for the long haul. And that sucks,
yeah.
but it's a harsh reality of business. I think I read somewhere it's called the Maximus Principle, named after Maximus from Gladiator.
Okay.
Where you go into war, and as you're charging in, not all the soldiers are able to keep up at the same rate.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them are able to keep up at the very beginning of the fight.
Yeah.
And then they're going to fall off, or they're going to give up and they're going to walk away. It's okay. It's just part of the way the whole organization works as an organism.
Sure.
You know? And so when the team understands that some people might be there for a season, and that we all have a role to play, that the organization isn't there for them as an individual. You're hired like an actor is hired to play a role to the best of your ability.
There you go. Yep.
Right? Now it takes it off of the me-ism, and it puts a focus on what is your role? Are you living up to the expectations mm-hmm. of that role? And then you can work into, what are you, the individual? What are you, Adam Mock? Yeah. What are you, Tom Reber, bring to that role that nobody else can bring to the role? And how do we exploit it?
And so... I'm in a situation where I see companies, you know, one of the biggest pressures they have is the financial pressure of making a profit. We're not going to get into that with your current company mm-hmm. here, but I personally believe that the fastest way to plug your losing money leak is one of the fastest ways is accountability of your people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've just seen it over and over and over where if you're not holding people accountable to their job, then, you know, crap happens.
Right.
So how does that work in your world? Accountability. Tell me about that.
Great. Accountability comes down to two questions that I really believe every single person who is responsible for supervising, managing, directing, leading. This goes for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this goes for people just in their house, in their home life. Even there's two really powerful questions that you can ask, and one is, what am I pretending not to know that I know? Because a lot of times when you're in leadership positions, you get really fearful to tackle things because you're like, ah, I know this is going on, but I'm going to pretend I don't know that's going on because I don't want to deal with it.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're talking about on an accountability level, and you think someone's either wasting time, not performing, not meeting their due dates, not mm-hmm. being held accountable on something, we can trap ourselves into pretending that we don't know that simply because we don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
So what are you pretending not to know, you know? And the second question is, what conversations are you not having that you need to be having?
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's good.
So, and that will free you up too, because if you ask yourselves those regularly, and you know, you start the day, or even if you want to slow it down and start every Monday like that, mm-hmm. or end every week like that, what am I pretending not to know that I know? Ooh, this person isn't doing this. Well, the next question, what conversations are you not having that you need to be having? I need to call them in my office right now, or I need to take them aside, and I need to say, hey, what are you working on? Mm-hmm. Why isn't this like that? That's where all accountability, I think, can be wrapped up with those two questions, if people would have the courage to actually follow through on this.
Well, I'm just, as you're saying that, I'm imagining how much better an organization will run right out of the gate if that alone just happened. Yeah. Not only you ask those questions, but then you act on them.
Yeah.
And refuse to just be a mediocre leader, mm-hmm. and put your head in the sand.
Right.
But just go, all right, because part of being a leader, like it or not, is you got to step up, mm-hmm. and you got to have some uncomfortable conversations from time to time, and right. that's just is what it is.
You can't influence people, and value can't be created unless you interact on that level. You have to interact on that level. And trust can't be grown from it.
So how... what are a couple things that come to mind when I say define a strong business? Like must-haves.
Must-haves for a strong business? I think it would depend on the business. It depends on that question, why? Why are you around?
Mm-hmm.
So what doesn't first enter my mind is profitability, strictly financial profitability.
Right.
Because let's replace the word business with just organization.
Okay.
If the organization is to get a message out and the organization is able to sustain itself, or it's even done part-time by someone who has a full-time job, but they believe so much in why that message needs to go out, what's strong about that organization is the ability to tolerate that type of stress, the the ability to work those hours, endure, to put that passion out, you know, without mm-hmm. losing that fuel. I would say that would be a strong organization,
yeah.
or a strong business. If the why is about profitability,
mm-hmm.
You would have to measure it by that. So I think the answer to that question depends on the type of organization. I would say what would make them strong, the team, the trust. Is there value to whatever it is? Is there value to the finances? Is there value to the message? Mm-hmm. Is there value to the product that's being put out, that people want it, and not just want it, but that they would perpetuate it?
Yeah.
For us, you know, what I tell my staff, if we look at it just on a bookend, there are escalators to what would make us the best that we can be. So if we sell one book, we can pat ourselves on the back and go, woohoo, we sold a book, right?
Sure.
And someone might become a fan of that one book. But if we sell that book, it would be better for us if that consumer became a fan of the author who wrote the book.
Mm.
Because now we just haven't sold one book. They will buy whatever books that author has done, right? So it's better for us to make them a fan of the author, not just sell the one book. Now they've bought books. Better than just the books and being a fan of that author is the company that's putting it out. So now our brand becomes very important. If they become a fan of the brand, they trust what books we put out. They believe in the authors that we put out. They buy more products. Now the brand becomes more important, right?
Yeah.
So what would build a strong organization is that type of mindset that says, well, why are we here, and how do we absolutely leverage and exploit, which isn't a bad word.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think it is, exploit every ounce of resource we have to maximize value for who we're trying to either deliver this product, this good, this message to, or this service to.
Well, you know, I had a visual when you were talking about, you know, making somebody a fan of the author, you mm-hmm. know, instead of just the book. And the visual I had was dominoes,
mm-hmm.
and you just chose to move over a couple dominoes before you pushed it over.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you push the right domino over, you know, I always talk about goal setting and things like that. Like, let's set the right goal mm-hmm. that when I reach it, it's going to impact a lot of other stuff, you know,
right.
you know, and have more byproducts of setting the right goal. So,
yeah. Absolutely. Apple, I think, is a great example of this, or Starbucks. Their brand are so strong. Whether people love or hate those brands, it is so solid that you can go anywhere in the world, have no writing, and see that Apple icon, you know exactly what it is. And it's synonymous with quality.
Yeah.
Right? And Starbucks is synonymous with the type of experience that you want to have, where you're going to get away and do business from there, or get the type of coffee you want. What are some of the things that Starbucks can do? You can go in there and buy a CD from Starbucks. You can buy one cup of coffee, right? It's simply a step as part of the whole big thing. Those are strong organizations. They understand why they exist and what they do. Many organizations get it backward, and it's about what they do, not why they do it. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think organizations fall in danger of failing. If we start looking at Medallion and say, what do? We publish books.
Yeah.
But there's zero heart in that. Yeah. It's a very left brain procedure.
Have you seen Simon Sinek's TED Talk on Start With Why?
I have not.
He's got a book called, I think it's called Start With Why.
Oh, okay.
He uses the example of Apple.
Yeah.
He talks about the Wright brothers, Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. And so he used the example. He says, how was it that Martin Luther King and that movement was able to get so many people to Washington, D.C. in August when they didn't have a tweet, they didn't have a Facebook page, they didn't have all this, and this message spread? And it's because it was the right message. It connected. And so the basic premise is when you connect with people and when they believe what you believe, they buy.
Absolutely.
And that, exactly like you said, where Starbucks could put a CD out and people buy it.
Exactly.
Okay. So, it's a good book. Mm-hmm. Good video. It's like a 17-minute TED Talk, too.
Sounds
so
awesome.
If you don't put on time to read the book, do that. Uh-huh. Work-life balance. All right. I just have to say that you have like the most talented family in the world. you truly are in so many ways. Your wife and kids are amazing. You're amazing. You guys artistic and creative and writing and music, and I mean just crazy. I mean, you really demolished the box, man, with that. And I've known you, I don't know, 6 years or something, mm-hmm. something like that, five, 6 years, right in there. Uh-huh. And from my vantage point, I've watched a guy who not only has built a pretty dang strong career, mm-hmm. doing really well, but I've gotten to know you and your family, and we hang out and this and that. And you got a strong family, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you guys are pretty tight.
Yeah.
You guys are, like, in MMA classes together. So don't mess with any of the mocks, because they'll kick your ass. They know jujitsu and all this other stuff, and he'll, grab your thumbnail, and you'll be crying. But that's such a rare thing, mm-hmm. for somebody with so much responsibility in the corporate world, whether they own their business or they run somebody's business like you do.
Mm-hmm.
How do we find more stability? How do you do this?
Balance?
Yeah.
I don't know. I wish it was like the secret formula. I know for us, when Sarah and I got married, I was 25, she was 23.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 42 now. Yeah, we've been married 17 years. A priority for us when we were having our first child, our daughter, Magpie, was that family was going to be everything. Our lives weren't going to revolve around our child's, but our child wasn't going to revolve around us either. This was a team atmosphere. I mean, it really was. We would still parent. We're not there to be their best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And family was very, very important to us. Sarah and I are just creative people that drew us to each other. She's has a theater background. She got accepted to a theater in London when we met. She didn't go because she wanted to hang with me. Because
you
said,
look so good waiting tables at Medieval Times. Uh-huh. She was like, I'm going to hang out with that guy.
But you know, she's crazy talented. And so I think talent fuels talent and passion fuels passion. And so even though I was working at Medieval Times and busting my ass at Medieval Times waiting tables, I'd come home and we would dream about all kinds of things, you know, whether it was drawing something or writing something or creating something. And I remember Sarah, first time she got a sewing machine, she just simply said, I want to learn how to sew. And I didn't realize that it would lead to her really learning how to sew and creating dolls and all kinds of really killer stuff, which just it impassions me to be like, oh, I'm not just an illustrator, you know, mm-hmm. I want to write. And now I have two coffee table books out, one that was sold, I think it still is, in the Art Institute gift shop, Fallen Superheroes. We have an Ippy Award-winning book, my very own book, and I learned how to collaborate with other people. And so then I think the balance started happening early on for us as a family, because when we weren't working, we were still creating and dreaming.
Hmm.
And we brought our kids in on that creation and that passion, that dreaming. When Gabriel was born, it was the same thing. He was a natural at piano. Magpie, as she got older, was taught herself how to play guitar, and then we got her guitar lessons. And she continued to nurture that, taught herself how to do makeup, incredible amount of makeup. She's a great lyricist. Like I said, Gabriel writes, but we don't do those things apart from each other all the time. We might create them apart, but then we come together to celebrate it.
Okay.
And so,
what's that look like?
It looks like Magpie as a 16-year-old having the freedom and the desire to go to her parents. When you hear a lot of teenagers pull away and want their seclusion and stuff, she wants to come and say, hey, look what I did. Hey, this is what I'm thinking about. This is what I'm reading. This is a movie I just saw. This is what I think these lyrics mean in this song. And have this dialogue, this very intelligent adult dialogue with us. Gabriel, it's the same way. Hey, I came up with a joke. Hey, where do babies come from? You know what I mean? Why do people act like this? So what does this mean about God and space? And having a safe place to have those kinds of conversations. So it creates this balance where things aren't so compartmentalized. It's not like work, family, and things like that. It's just life. It's life spilling out. Onto the canvas everywhere. And I do have to say I'm proud of what we've been able to accomplish so far. And we don't have all the answers, but I'm looking forward to see what develops.
Absolutely, you should be. Yeah. And so how did you do that? Because it's not like you didn't come home from work having a stressful day.
Sure.
And, you know, and it's still there. Is it still in the back of your mind and it's sitting there? And are you able to, you know, maybe your background in performing and stuff, do you turn into an actor? I mean, what happened? How do you deal with that stress?
Sarah and I really care about hearing and including each other in on how the day was. So for me to come home, even though I was just waiting tables, and say, let's talk. I want to tell you about my day and I want to hear about your day. Mm-hmm. And actually making that time. It's not like to say, hey, we spend a half hour every day doing this. It was a natural rhythm. I'd rather talk to my wife than turn on the TV.
Yeah.
To detox, because I need to get it out of my system. And I think the byproduct of that is our kids saw it and heard it. And our kids see us, you know, together, you know, in terms of feeling like I have a healthy balance of stuff. Our kids see see us playing around with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, they see us smacking each other on the ass or giving each other a kiss, right? And they hear our conversations and they hear our adult conversations on things that, hey, money is tight right now. We're paycheck to paycheck right now. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, we have to do this, or I'm really stressed about this relationship or this thing at work. And so I think it helped breed an open dialogue in our house, is what I'm hoping. But it also allowed a safe place to kind of land and really land, not leave it all at work, and then you're home, you're turning on something else or putting on a mask, but coming home and sharing. The only way Sarah's going to really know how my day went is if I tell her. And I don't just tell her how my day went. I tell her my fears, my excitements, anxieties, challenges, and that I hear hers as well.
Right.
You know, that when I come home, what happened today? How are you feeling? How are the kids? What were you working on that you're excited about? Who'd you talk to? Like, include me in on those conversations.
And it obviously unifies you guys, make you feel like you're on the same team. You're not on separate teams, yeah. Which just knowing you is very similar to how you run the organization that you're in charge of, too. It's that, and it's not surprising that you run it authentically.
Yes.
Just being yourself like that. So I guarantee you there's people that are listening to this right now that are in a funk. Mm. Their life isn't where they thought it would be. Their career isn't where they thought it would be. Maybe they're just coming out of a tough financial time. Maybe, you know, whatever. You know, we all have these periods that we go through. What do you tell somebody, or what, you know? And I know until you know the specific situation, it's usually a different. Sure. You know, there's not a blanket statement, but I know you've had some pretty tough times in your life.
Uh-huh.
What? How do you get out of that funk? What are some things you do?
The first thing that comes to mind, when I'm coaching people, I usually end, when I'm done with a coaching term, and a coaching term can be, you know, it could be 12 weeks or 12 sessions, or, you know, it could be longer, it could be shorter. But I end with this great story, and I think it would help anybody, regardless of what the funk is. And I'm going to butcher the story, so I'm just going to kind of paraphrase what it is.
Sure.
And it comes down to this idea that there's a monk walking down a road, and he comes across a soldier. And this soldier stops this monk And the soldier's got you know, this big gun with him, and he blocks off the monk. And the soldier says very authoritatively, who are you? Where are you going? And why are you going there? And the monk looks at him and smiles and says, well, how much do they pay you to do this every day? And the soldier says, well, they give me $25 a day. And the monk says, I'll give you $50 a day to meet me on the same road and ask me those same three questions every day. Who are you? Where are you going? And why are you going there? And so at the end of my coaching sessions, I tell people, ask themselves those questions every single day, because it will steer you back on course. It'll shake up your world.
Right.
Because if you don't know who you are, you can't answer the other questions. Who am I? Well, if you don't know who you are, you won't know where you're going or why you're going there. Right? Uh-huh. You're walking around with amnesia.
Right.
So you have no idea. You're hoping, like, it's like you're throwing a, it's like a monkey throwing a dart hoping to get a bullseye. Like, you're hoping something's going to work out for you. It won't if you don't know who you are. You are your own true north. That's where your authenticity comes from, is you. So you have to know who you are. If you're in a funk, I would say sit down with one sheet of paper and a pen, a pencil, type it out in a Word document. Write a biography on yourself. Know who you are. Celebrate your accomplishments. Know what drives you. Know what your convictions are. Know what your values are. You know what lights you up, what you're passionate about. Know who you are, and really know who you are. Because I'd be willing to bet that some people who are in a funk have forgotten who they are.
Yeah.
They've become what other people want them to be.
Sure.
They become what their bosses expect them to be at work, what their spouse expects of them, what their kids expect of them, what their parents expect of them. That they
or what they begin to expect of themselves, because they compare themselves to other people.
Absolutely.
As well. You know, they make comparisons, and then so you feel like crap about yourself because you're
100%, especially in this day and age of Facebook. Everyone has their highlight reel on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
So you compare yourself and you say, I should be there. Well, you shouldn't, because you're not them.
Yeah.
So ask yourself, who are you?
We should start a social media platform called Suckbook or something, where we just put all our bad moments on it.
Listen,
it's just like bad shit.
I'm friends with people on Facebook who all they post is how crappy their day is going. You know, I want to hide them. But that would be the first step. Who are you? Like I said, write it out. Know who you are. State your name. Say it out loud. Mm-hmm. I'm Adam Muck. I'm 42 years old. You know, I'm the COO of Medallion Media Group. I'm a father. I'm a co-owner of this company as a husband with my wife. I'm creative. I like Lucha Libre. I like classic pinups. I think they're cool, you know?
Yeah.
I like H.P. Lovecraft mythos. I'm a spiritual thinker. I love aliens and UFOs. I like chilling with my friends. I like hard liquor over beer. Like, who are you?
Yeah.
You know? Find that out. Move on to the next question. Where are you going? You might say, I don't know where the hell I'm going. Okay, where do you want to go? You know? Because again, if you're in a funk and you know who you are, where are you going? I don't know. I have no direction. Okay, based on who you are, that should tell you what you want. Right? If I didn't know where I was going, I know I like Lucha Libre. Hey, maybe I should explore something in the wrestling field. Even if I'm not going to be a wrestler, maybe I could create something for them, right? If I like H.P. Lovecraft, could I write short stories? If I like pinup stuff, am I a good artist? Am I a good photographer? If I like liquor, can I work at a distillery? You know, can I be a salesman for this type of job?
I find that's one of the hardest questions for people to answer is, what do you want?
Yeah.
But again, building on the order of questions, starting with
absolutely
who are you?
Yeah, so who are you? Where are you going? And when you know that answer, and again, the question isn't, where do your parents want you to go? Where does your spouse want you to go? Where do your friends want you to go? Where are you expected to go? It's on the question, who are you? Where are you going? And then why are you going there? That's like the punctuation of everything. I'm going there because I love it. I'm going there because that makes me feel alive. I'm going there because people need my help. I'm going there because I can contribute. I'm going there because I want to learn more. You know, I'm going there because I want to change the stars, as they say in Knight's Tale, that movie, Knight's Tale. That's why I'm going there. And then you can ask yourself those questions daily, weekly. Wake up the next day and go, who am I? Where am I going, and why am I going there? I believe that whatever funk a listener could be in right now, those questions could absolutely help them start to find their true north. And let's give them some direction. And it will be terrifying for a lot of people. I know that. It'd be terrifying.
Yeah.
Because some of it's going to mean this. Oh, shit, I got to quit my job.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I have to stop going to this church. Oh, I have to lose some friends. Oh, I have to, like, you know, trim the fat on my Facebook stuff. oh, I have to have a talk with my spouse, right?
Right.
I need to change the dynamic of my family. I need to talk to my boss about getting a raise, feeling underappreciated. It leads to some very hard, scary realities.
Yeah.
But you won't get there if you don't ask yourself those questions.
Yeah, you spend your whole life chasing something that you've that you want that you're never going to get because you've been unwilling to answer those questions.
Right.
And it's, I mean, you know my story, and I had a successful company and a great partner and had a lot of great things going for me, but I was not feeling alive. I felt like I reached a point where I was going through the motions. I big athlete and football player. I played drums for so many years in different bands and studio work. And it seemed like the longer I owned this business, that past business, I stopped doing all those things that meant so much to me that was partially of who I am.
Yeah.
And I remember how many talks have we had through the years of just, you know, what am I going to do with this thing? But I just knew that's where I want to encourage you guys. If you're in a funk, just take a shot.
Uh-huh.
Take a shot. I did not know what motor was going to be. I just knew that was my mantra. I'm going to work harder than anyone else, even if I don't know what that work's going to be yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep the faith. I'm going to do the things others are unwilling to do. And I'm going to find a way to win in my life and not settle for mediocrity. But I had no idea how I was going to support my family, and it was a scary moment. It was terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And what's also interesting is that it was also really hard financially, but then a moment came when I was able to define why I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found my own language. And for those of you listening, Adam, I would text him and I'd go, what about this? And he'd go, that's bad. Or he would text an idea. And this went on for years. It seemed like forever. It would go on.
It still goes on.
It still goes on.
Yeah.
And so, but I remember I landed on, I had another coach ask me a question. Said, what are the some themes in your life that have always been there? And when I look back at as an athlete and weightlifter and kettlebells and the Marine Corps and all this other stuff, I saw this theme of strength. Just strength in general really seemed to weave itself in and out of my life. I'm just drawn to it. And I'm like, you know what? That's really what I'm about. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to help people have stronger lives. And in turn, stronger businesses, because I got some knowledge in that area too, and I can help people with that. And once that switch was turned and my why was nailed, the money came, more connections came, but it all was because I started. I mean, I quit my job. I remember sitting there and I'm like, I went to my business partner. I said, man, I love you, but I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he had this shocked look on his face, like, where did this come from? And over the next couple months, you know, we worked out what we had to work out and I moved on. And it was terrifying. But, and that started because I was at a party and there were four other guys standing around with me. And I said, and I just happened to ask the question. I said, who loves what they do? Mm-hmm. And not one of the four guys said they loved what they did.
Hmm.
And that was kind of like a seed being planted months before. I'm just like, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to wake up every day and not love what I'm doing. So, you know, if you know you need to make a change, answer those questions. We'll make sure to get those in the show notes. You know, earlier I asked you to define a strong business, and it was, and it's a hard one to answer because you got to know a lot of things. But it reminds me of I had another guest on, Mark Rifkin. He's a strength professional. He travels all over the world and teaches and speaks on strength. And he has a saying. He says, strength is an attitude.
Huh.
And it doesn't matter how much weight you lift. Doesn't matter what type of revenue your company does. There's a lot of things that really don't matter. But it's really that attitude that you have, that mindset of, I'm not going to settle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bring what I can bring, and what I bring is strong enough.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm mm-hmm. doing that. So, all right. So last question,
mm-hmm.
where are you headed?
Where am I headed?
You know, what do you see in the near future? And
I see me always being, diverse. I mean, the first thing that pops to mind when you say where I'm headed is something I'm excited about, which is the Adati Empire. It's mm-hmm. something that Sarah and I get to do together and allows us to create anything off the top of our heads and kind of create this world. It's very much like Oz, very Frank Baum, Wizard of Oz kind of world of these dolls that she makes, but there are paintings that I repurpose, but then Sarah might find an old piece of furniture and repurpose that. Anything can come out of the Adati Empire, and I love it. I love just the amount of creative freedom. So one of the places that I'm definitely headed is towards growing this empire, this very eclectic, whimsical, fun celebration of things that just make you smile, that you want to surround yourself
with. It's like a playground for you guys.
Yeah,
this is,
I love it.
Right up.
I love it. Yeah. And it's something that I can see as it grows, our kids even taking hand, and our daughter Magpie is actually a crazy good sculptor. I believe she'll probably contribute to it. And Gabriel is actually, a budding artist himself. And for all I know, he may write music for the Adati Empire.
Right.
I don't know. but that's definitely somewhere I'm headed. Family and I are moving to California to open up some other opportunities. We've inherited Illinois. We've been born and raised in Illinois, mm-hmm. so you inherit the state. But there's some opportunities out in California. Triple Threat is growing. There's a lot of artists converging in the Orange County area, so we're heading out that way to build the empire. Medallion Media Group is going to be transitioning, I don't want to say 100% transitioning, but we're going to be launching something I'm excited about, and I'll give you an exclusive here on Motor because we haven't said this to anybody else, but we're going to be launching a magazine and an online space, a digital magazine that celebrates creativity, culture, and beyond. So we still have books, but we're going to start tapping into what creatives are doing and how these things are all interconnected, because our lives are absolutely intersecting with art at all times. Everything from the microphone we're using here was created by an artist, to the shirt that's on you, mm-hmm. to the way that we creatively think. We're all tied together by this idea of art and creativity. And so we want to celebrate that. I think it's funny. We started talking about my bio, and we joke about it's kind of all over the map. I want to stay a Renaissance man. I really do. Mm-hmm. I want to stay diverse. The first time I ever heard that term, I was junior or senior year in high school. My history teacher, Mr. Rush, is a cool guy, and he started off one class by showing the cover, I think, of Time magazine. And on the cover was David Byrne from the Talking Heads.
Mm.
And it said Renaissance Man. And he said, "You guys know what a Renaissance Man is?" I had never heard the term before. I only knew David Byrne from singing Burning Down the House.
That's right.
You know what I mean? He went on to explain that a Renaissance Man is this embodiment. This could be a Renaissance man or woman. Is this embodiment of someone who is knowledgeable in a lot of areas. Mm-hmm. They've really lived. And they can hold a conversation with anybody. And, mm-hmm. they hold themselves well, and they're confident, and they're secure, and they understand the world around them. And I remember that really stuck with me. And it's funny because I remember that moment going, I would love to be a Renaissance man.
Yeah.
And I don't think I set out intentionally to do that, but I think subconsciously.
Well, if I would have known that was an option growing up, I would have wanted to have been one of them.
Right? Right? Now, if you can make a living doing a lot of little things
absolutely.
That you love,
absolutely.
You meet the most unique people, have some great experiences. I'd like to continue to grow I'd like to see the Adati Empire grow. I'd like to see Medallion continue to grow. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see Triple Threat grow. On the wings of angels. I want to continue to coach people. I meet the most interesting people
right.
through Accelero and coaching. And I want to continue just to create. So where I'm going is a playground. That's where I'm going.
There you go.
I love it. Big playground.
I love it, man. Well, dude, I really appreciate you being on and talking and hanging out. I guarantee you you've given some people listening some good stuff. I know somebody out there is better off for the time they spent here listening to your story. And listen, I highly recommend that everyone listening finds a way to follow Adam somehow, whether social media,
down the street,
whatever it is. Again, we'll put we'll put everything in the show notes here of how to connect and follow him on Twitter and all that other stuff. Do you have a preferred method?
You know, I don't. I mean, Twitter is pretty easy. I'm just Adam Mock, A-D-A-M-M-O-C-K,
okay.
On Twitter. You can you request my friendship on Facebook. It's the same thing. And I'm on Instagram as The Great Cyan. That's kind of like, you know, The Great Oz, but The Great C-Y-A-N. It's my middle name, and it's an homage to some wrestlers I liked growing up.
I love it, man. I love it. So awesome. So make sure you connect with Adam Mock via the ways he just told you. And all right, so that's it for this episode of the Strongpreneur Podcast. Take what you heard today. If something's poking at you in the brain or the heart or wherever, act on it. Don't just sit around. Wage your own war on mediocrity so that you can live a strong life, build a strong business if that's your thing. And don't forget to visit motorhard.com for more cool stuff to help you do that. See you guys next time. Thanks.